Hope everyone had a restful, productive Yontif break. Hope everyone is all refreshed, energized, ready to take on the new sugya. The sugya that we're going to start today is definitely a complex and abstract one, but one that is very significant for Melacha Shabbos. I don't know how far everyone got with the Mar Makomos this morning. They are quite complex and long. Sorry? Did anyone get through half of the first section? Okay, that's pretty good. Anyone get through all the first section? Okay, so like I said, I wouldn't have expected it. It's a complex discussion, and it's one that's very abstract, but it impacts every malacha. And it impacts every malacha in terms of how it plays out. It also just impacts the concept of a malacha. Just what is a malacha, what counts as a malacha, what doesn't count as a malacha. There are certain malachos whose fundamental existence is called into question by the issue of malacha sheina tzricha l'gufa. And it has tremendous practical ramifications. Right? Figuring out what is a malacha sheina tzricha l'gufa affects the halacha tremendously, because we probably assume, and we'll get into some of the more specific halachic aspects either later in the week or maybe on Sunday, we'll figure out how exactly to allot things. But if we assume that the majority view is that malacha sheina tzricha l'gufa is pater, but even though that presumably means there's still an issur d'rabbanan, and then we'll see maybe a very substantial issur d'rabbanan, nonetheless, it has a tremendous impact on halacha, and especially in Halacha Shabbos when something is asur midrabbanan. So therefore, to know when something is a malacha sheina tzricha l'gufa and when it isn't is going to play a big role in practical Shmirat Shabbos as well. So there's a lot that we need to figure out about this, and also in terms of its relationship to another major sugya in Shabbos, that's the sugya of davar she'eino niskaven. Somebody does a malacha unintentionally, he does action A and that causes action B, and that is then affected by the concept of psik resha, when there is a definite guarantee that's going to happen. So what's the difference between this sugya and that sugya, and how do they overlap and how do they interact? It's all important and somewhat complex, so what we'll try to do is we're going to try to talk about these two back to back, because they are intertwined issues, many overlapping makoros, overlapping themes. So our agenda is we'll try to talk about malacha sheina tzricha l'gufa first. Presumably that'll take us at least much of this week. And then to segue right from there into psik resha and davar she'eino niskaven, and talk about what's different, what's the same, and how they affect practical halacha. And that will then bring us back into the malachos. So the next malacha we have up to on our list, which is Kotzer, if I'm not mistaken. So Kotzer itself is a malacha that draws on a lot of these concepts. So hopefully it'll all be a synergistic package. Okay, if you find the initial experience of the Mar Makomos to be somewhat confusing, to be somewhat, everyone found it to be simple and obvious and a walk in the park. Okay, so then this will be a breeze. So let's try to delineate some of the concepts. We'll try to go relatively slowly today because some of the issues are very complex and abstract. Now let's just try to get some basic definitions and some basic working concepts of what we're trying to talk about here. So I think the most common view, if I were to ask you before having much encounter with Masechta Shabbos and the Rishonim, if I were to ask you, what is a malacha sheina tzricha l'gufa? I think the most common perception is that which is actually the minority view in Rishonim. What am I talking about? I'm talking about the view of Tosfos, which we'll give more attention to later. I'm just mentioning it now for contrast. That according to Tosfos, what's a malacha sheina tzricha l'gufa? Somebody want to help me out? It's a malacha that's done for a purpose other than that which was done in the Mishkan. So the Mishkan being our source of definition for the malachos, if a malacha is done for a purpose other than that which they did it in the Mishkan, so then it's not going to make the full grade as a malacha. So, for example, some of the cases that come up in the Gemara, so if somebody extinguishes a flame, right? So you saw that Gemara, we all know the Mishnah from Friday night, Baba Malikin, right? If somebody extinguishes a flame, what's the primary constructive reason that they would extinguish a flame in the Mishkan?
To
prime the wick, or to make coals, something to make some productive item out of this formerly burning item, whether it's a wick or a coal. So that, if you're doing it for a different purpose, okay, so maybe that's a malacha shenei tzricha l'gufa. Or let's say, for example, our case that we already saw in Daf Ayin Gimel, we talk about somebody who's digging a hole, but he's not digging a hole in order to make a hole in the ground, he's digging it because he wants the dirt. So we saw it's a little bit of a mysterious example because the Gemara mentions there that it's not dependent on this machlokas whether or not malacha shenei tzricha l'gufa is pater. Because even Rabbi Yehuda would pater in that case because it's makalkel, because you're messing up the ground. But it works well also with this perception of malacha shenei tzricha l'gufa, right? Because what is the malacha of choresh, we discussed? You are trying to prepare the ground. And here you're interested instead in taking the dirt away from the ground. That is a completely different function than the Mishkanian function. So therefore, Tosus works well. So that is probably the more common perception. You ask somebody on the street what the Malach Shein Tzrich L'Guf is, so they'll look at you really funny, they have no idea what any of those words mean. But you ask somebody in the Beis Medrash what a Malach Shein Tzrich L'Guf is, who hasn't seen all the other views in Rishon, and they're probably most likely to say what we've just said. However, when we look at Rashi, or a lot of other Rishonim, we see that they almost all fall into a different camp. And Tosfos is really kind of by themselves on this issue, even though Tosfos, we'll discuss this more in coming days, Tosfos may not just be the more popular view nowadays, but it may be the dominant view of Allah. So it could be that somehow the minority view won out here. We'll talk about whether or not that's the case. But almost all the other Rishonim see Malacha Shein Tzrich L'Gufa as something different. Right, how, just in a word, how do all the other Rishonim seem to see it? Whether we'll talk about whether or not they're saying the same thing, but they seem to at least broadly fall into a common camp. Yes?
Preventing a negative situation.
Oh, okay. Preventing a negative situation or removing a negative situation, probably a better way to phrase it. Right? That there's some problem and you want to get rid of the problem. So, for example, we see this in Rashi in a bunch of places. Right? It comes up in Rashi in the sugya about the candle. Right? So you're extinguishing a candle. You could be extinguishing the candle for a couple of reasons. You could be doing it because the fire burning, now once it's put out, has enhanced the wick or enhanced the coals. So then that was a whole productive process. You purposely set fire to the wick, and you purposely blew it out, because now, having burnt and been extinguished, it's now a more useful wick. But what if I'm trying to get rid of the fire because I don't want the fire here? Because there's a different examples in the Mishnah. It's going to attract attention if it's there. It's going to stop me from sleeping. It's going to use up the oil. It's going to use up the lamp. So all those reasons, I essentially see this fire as getting in my way. So I want to get it away from me. That seems to be, in Rashi's understanding, why it's a malacha shenei tzrich l'guf. Or, where this machlokas is spelled out even more prominently, and where Rashi and Tosfos are there on the same page, right? So this is what we saw on, if you got a chance to see, from the Mishnah on Tzadi Gimel, and Tzadi Dalet Amud Aleph, right? What's the case over there? Where somebody is doing what malacha in that case? Malacha of Hotzah. And so he has a dead body in the house. And he wants to take it out of the house. So here, according to Rashi and a lot of other Rishonim, why is that a malacha shein tzricha legufa? Because you don't want the dead body in the house. We'll say for the reasons of Tumah, or for many other understandable reasons, you don't want the dead body in your house. So therefore, you're going to get rid of it. You're going to take it out. Right? And this is Rashi inside of Gimel Amud Beis, Reb Shimon Poter. It says, Afilu b'meis sholem, dehavi malacha she'ein etzricha legufa. V'chol malacha she'ein etzricha legufa, ela lasalka me'olav, hevi malacha she'ein etzricha legufa. But any malacha that you're not doing it for a productive, for an affirmative reason, but because you want to get rid of something, so that is called the malacha she'ein etzricha legufa. Why? Debertsono lo bo'lo? He didn't want this to come to him. He didn't want this mace to show up in his house. It's there against his will. Obviously, mace doesn't show up. Somebody becomes a mace. V'lo hayetzarech lo, and he doesn't need it. Hilkach lav meleches mechsheves he lirib shimon. There's a lot of charged words in that Rashi. We'll have to try to figure out exactly what he's getting at. But that is going to be exempt. That's going to be, according to Rav Shimon's view, something that you are pater from. And if you got a chance to see a lot of other Rishonim, the Ritva, the Rashba, the Ramban, the Meiri, the Baba Mor, all seem to be working in this camp. And it all seem to be expressing something along these lines, that essentially, if you're doing it for a negative reason, rather than a positive reason, so then that's the malacha shein tzricha legufa. A lot of the other Rishonim use a little bit of a different language. We'll talk about it later whether there's some difference. If you look in the Rishonim, like the Rashba and the Ramban, they talk about the fact that you get no hana from this malacha. This malacha doesn't serve you in any way other than undoing a bad situation. And a lot of them also make reference to the Baal HaMor. A lot of them say the Raza, the Baal HaMor, he is the source for this type of approach. Did you get a chance to see the Baal HaMor? The Baal HaMor is long. Anyone get a chance to look at the Baal HaMor? So the Baal HaMor is very long. Somebody was asking me whether it's a priority or not. You know, it's all relevant. Everything he says is relevant, so it's worth reading if you have the time. One of the major elements, first of all, again, it's Rishon, the later Rishonim are quoting. A lot of them invoke the Raza on this point. But something that's more clearly expressed in the original and not so clearly in the later Rishonim is that he has a reason for insisting on this. Why does he say that a malacha has to be this way? Because of the Mishkan. Which is not necessarily an obvious point. Right? You could have said the first half without the second half. And that's something that we'll try to clarify a little bit. Right? Because why is it that we're assuming that a malacha shein tzricha legufa should be pater? Right? We'll talk about this in more detail. But, sorry? So it would seem like, as many Rishonim seem to be expressing, that it's a lack of malachas machsheves. Right? So malachas machsheves, yes, is technically speaking derived from the Mishkan, but is a broad conceptual idea, an idea that the malacha should be purposeful, should be artistic maybe, should be something constructive. So it could be simply that we're not necessarily looking at any specific examples of the Mishkan, but just at the concept that we have to have a constructive, affirmative malacha, and that something that's negative, something that's more about getting rid of something, is not going to be in that category. Hi.
Just wondering, malacha shein tzricha legufa, is it mutar midrabanan or just a raisa?
Oh, so it's clearly awesome midrabanan. What we will discuss is that it may even be more than it's a midrabanan. That even according to Rav Shimon who paters, so says it's an issa drabanan, but there are many who see, and we'll talk about why this might be, that it may be a very strong drabanan, so much so that a lot of the kulas that apply to the rabbanans might not apply. So it's at least asur drabanan. It could be that it's very drabanan. I mean that it's very asur drabanan. Emphasis on the very asur, not on the drabanan. That it's it could be an unusually strong drabanan. So we'll see. There are a lot of points about when we're generally lenient to Rabbanans. So does that apply to Malach Shein Shvich L'Guf or not? Maybe. You know, there are a couple of cases where we find Machlokas in some of the later poskim that maybe we're not even as lenient on this as we are on other Rabbanans. Why not? Maybe because it's Machlokas in the Gemara, maybe for other reasons. We'll talk about this. And of course, we'll also get into more. We've alluded to already the Rambam's view that Malach Shein Shvich L'Gufa is Chayiv. So here itself is something that's interesting to ponder. If you got a chance to see the Rambam, right, how does the Rambam fall out in terms of these views? Who does he agree with? Sorry, he agrees with the Behuda in terms of saying Yechayev, right? But in terms of the Rishonim that disagree as to the definition, what does the Rambam think a Malach Shein Shvich L'Guf is? Anyone have a stance on this? So the Rambam's not incredibly explicit, but a lot of the Achronim assumed that he was in the other camp. He was in the camp against Tosfos. He was in the camp with these other Rishonim. And he's not totally explicit, but he's close to explicit. Let's read it together, and you'll tell me what you think. Now, it's interesting. We've discussed this Rambam a couple times before now. Right? We talked about this Rambam the first day, because we talked about the fact that there was a difference between the Rambam and the Mishnah in terms of how he phrases the Malachas. Right? That the Mishnah says the Malachas are Hazoreya, Hachoresh, etc., etc. And the Rambam lists the Malachas as actions, as verbs. Right? Zriya, Harisha, etc. And we mentioned at the time, it's good Chazara, we mentioned that Rabbi Yosef Engel suggested that maybe it reflects, actually, he has a different interpretation of the Magen Avos, right? The Magen Avos before him, Mordechai Benet, said that this reflects that, according to the Rambam, Malach Shein Shvich L'Guf is Chayiv. He said essentially it's a fundamental difference between the Mishnah and the Rambam, because the Mishnah is trying to accommodate all views, including the view that we follow that Pater's Malach Shein Shvich L'Guf, while the Rambam is holding Malach Shein Shvich L'Guf is Chayiv. So therefore, the Mishnah talks about the individual who is planting, is plowing, etc., because his intent is crucial, while the Rambam apparently doesn't care about intent so much. Right? Because the Rambam is going to be Mechayiv you even if it's a Malach Shein Shvich L'Guf, so therefore he just talks about the actions abstractly. Remember that? That was from the first day? So, I wonder how well that holds up in light of this question of defining what Malach Shein Shvich L'Guf is. Let's look at the language of the Rambam. The Rambam says in Perek Aleph Halacha Zayin and Hilchos Shabbos, so the Rambam says, Kol Osa Malacha B'Shabbos Af Al Pi She'eino Tzarech L'Gufa Shal Malacha Chayev Alev. So whoever does malacha, yechayiv, even if it is a malacha shein etzrich l'gufa. So right away he says, not going to matter to me so much which way it is, because yechayiv anyway. And the Raiva jumps on him right away. The Raiva quotes Rabbeinu Chananel, who paskins like Rav Shimon, that you're pater, and that seems to be his view. So the Raiva expressing the view, a lot of other Rishonim hold that the Rambam is not accepted on this point, that Malach Shein Shvich L'Guf is Pater. So the Rambam is not really so interested in defining Malach Shein Shvich L'Guf because he holds it the same as any other Malach anyway. But he does get into it a little bit. So he goes on to say, so Ketzad, what are we talking about? Harei Shekava Saner, let's say you extinguish a light, Mipnei Shehu Tzarech L'Shemen O L'Psila, because you're worried about the oil or the wick, kadesh lo yovar, or kadesh lo yisarif, or kadesh lo yibaka cheresh shal ner. So you're interested in preserving the oil, or preserving the wick, or preserving the lamp. You're chayef for all of that. Mepnei she kibui malacha, because there's a malacha called kibui, varei niskavein lekabos, and you intended to extinguish. It's not like you did it by accident. V'yathal pi she'eno tzarech legufa kibui, even though you don't need the kibui itself. It's not that you need the extinguishment, so to speak, if that could be a word, And he only did it for other reasons, you're still chayiv. So let's say you take a thorn, something you want to get rid of, you carry it outside. Or you extinguish a ember, not because you want to make coal, but because it's dangerous and you want to get rid of the danger. Chayiv. Even though you're not interested in the effect of the extinguishment, you're not interested in the actual carrying, you're not interested in bringing something somewhere, rather, you're more interested in separating a damaging force, all those cases you're chayiv. So is the Rambam taking sides here in the Machlokas, Tosfos and the other Rishonim?
You can say, according to, it's hard to see that he's necessarily with the rope, but you can see that he's definitely against Tosos. Because Tosos was of the opinion that you simply didn't do the malacha, but wasn't was done the Mishnah. He's still saying, Dafka, whether you wanted it or not, you still did the malacha of Kibbutz. So
right.
It's definitely opposite Tosos.
Right, well, it's definitely opposite in terms of paskening against against Rav Shimon. In fact, his Machayah from Lav Shimon's Shibbutz Gufi is definitely arguing on the other Rav Shimon that way. But I think in terms of the definition of Malach HaShem Tzricha L'Gufa, the idea that it's got a Mishkanian premise, he doesn't talk about the Mishkan at all. He doesn't talk about defining things in terms of the Mishkan. And to whatever extent he defines things, he seems to define it like the other Rishonim. I think it's almost explicit. I mean, he doesn't go into as much detail as some of the other Rishonim. Mostly he doesn't need to, again, because it has very little nafkamina for him. But he does seem to be getting into it a little bit and saying that essentially the fact that you're not interested in what you're doing, but you're interested in pushing away something, Kadesh lo yizoku ben rabim, that doesn't take away from the chiv. So if that's the definition that he's working with, so I wonder if it's so accurate, let's say for example the way the Magen Avos used him, right, to say that a lack of intent is meaningless because he doesn't focus on what you're intending. He's focusing on the malacha regardless. I wonder how well it holds up. I think that interpretation holds up better when you take a Tosfos view. Right, when you say that a malacha essentially could be constructive one way or another, but the Mishkan has a certain type of constructiveness, and we want to focus on that. So then, your personal intent plays a much bigger role. You follow what I'm saying? That if you're, and it's a little bit of a complex point, let's say you're digging a hole. Alright, so you're digging a hole to make a hole or to get dirt. They're both straightforward, constructive acts. It just happens to be that in the Mishkan, they dug holes in order to affect the ground. So digging a hole for the dirt doesn't meet a Mishkan standard. So it's a malach shen yitzrich l'gufa for that reason. So where is the deficiency? Is the deficiency really in the act? Or the deficiency is really in why you're doing the act? The act basically is constructive either way. It just happens to be that you are not lining up so perfectly with the Mishkanian source. Sammy?
But his lashon is that he was mechavim mechavos.
Right.
In the Rambam. So therefore,
correct.
Clearly, if he wasn't being mechavim mechavos, so then it might not be as much of an issue. And that
except,
might be where the Magen Avos is.
Perhaps, except there he's also trying to... He's trying to also exclude a different p'tur, right? That since we also have the concept of davar sheni miskaven, so that you're going to be p'tur for anyway. Right? So if it's not p'sik reisha, let's say.
Right.
So
well,
there's
in case it is p'sik reisha.
Well, p'sik reisha after the fact. Let's say you did something that was not so obviously p'sik reisha, and then it turned out to extinguish a candle. So then you could be your p'tur for that.
Right, but he's talking about extinguishing a candle.
Right, but the fact that he's emphasizing you intended to do it might just be because he's trying to show you it's not a davar sheni miskaven.
But in this case, how could it be a davar sheni miskaven? It would be a p'sik reisha. Anything that you do that would definitely cause it to be
miskaven. We don't know that it was a p'sik reisha. He just says he blew out the candle. Right? So maybe I wasn't trying to blow out the candle. So he needs to emphasize that you intended to blow out the candle. Right? Because the other factors don't matter. See, if the Mishnah, if he was holding the Yerpater, right, then we need to have a case. Well, let's say I blew out the candle, but I blew it out to protect the wick. So then that's a Malach Shenis Rechel Guf for Yerpater. So, but he's saying, you're chayiv anyway. So he's trying to say, I don't care why you did it. You're chayiv for all the reasons, as long as you did it on purpose. So he needs to emphasize that you did it on purpose. That's what the Kavarna sentence is there for.
Right, so that's exactly what Maganos is saying, isn't it?
Maybe. I don't know. You see, it could be that it could still work. I think it works a little bit better with a Tosfos type of view. Because there, the action is really objective. You're digging. And it just happens to be the fact that you're interested more in the dirt rather than what the Mishkan was, that defines the Malacha different. I think within these views, these Rishonim, there are certain Malachos, which by their very nature is going to be a Malacha Shinitzrich Lagufa, or certain actions. I shouldn't say certain Malachos, as in the 39 Malachos, but there are certain actions which by their very nature are less productive, are less affirmative, and they're there to get rid of problems. And therefore, that's going to be something that's malachas and tzrichah legufa. We'll get into this a little bit later. I just want to mention it now as an example. There's a Ramban that talks about this later. But for example, you'll see, I don't think anyone's up to this yet in Marmakomos, but just to mention it now for its illustrative purposes, there's a big machlokas whether cutting nails or cutting hair or shaving hair. Is that a malacha shenis rechel legufa? On the one hand, it's certainly a clearly constructive, intentional, positive act. You are grooming. It's clearly a productive thing. On the other hand, if we're using a mishkan view, so what malacha is this related to? Gozes, right? And shearing a sheep. Why do they shear a sheep in the mishkan? To use the wool, right? Probably. It's a little bit machlokas also, but probably for the purpose of using the wool. So if you're using a Mishkan-based view, so that's something which maybe is going to be called the Malach Shinit Shvich L'Gufa. If we're talking about something that's constructive and affirmative, so then it gets a little blurry. And we'll get into that specific example a little bit later. So, okay, so Sammy's maintaining that he thinks, even having seen this Rambam, it's still, Mugging Up still works well. I think it could still work, but I think the Magen Avos's type of interpretation works a little better with Tosfos. You know, saying Tosfos basically saying that a malacha could be completely constructive, but if it doesn't match the Mishkan, your intent is for a different reason, that's going to pater you. Well, I think the other Rishonim are focusing a little bit more on the fact that the action is inherently negative, inherently something that you do to get rid of something, rather than something that you do constructively. And Shabbos is a time of Malachas Mashavas, is something constructive. And again, to get back to the Balamor, so you say that Malachas Mashavas is derived from the Mishkan, so everyone could agree that the concept perhaps is derived from the Mishkan. But I think the Balamor, if you look at his language, you can tell me if you agree, I think he goes a little bit further. And he's saying, let's look at the malachas that were done, the 39 malachas that were performed in the Mishkan, were generally all performed for constructive purposes. And therefore, that itself shows us that we have to meet their model somehow, that anything that's going to qualify as a malacha should have general commonality with these Mishkan malachas. They were all done for positive reasons. Therefore, that's a requirement when it comes to malacha as well. Okay, so far so good. Everybody basically on top of things. Okay, so this issue is a big fight. And Tosis here has a lengthy comment. We won't look at it all inside together. But Tosfos basically says, the first sentence, he says the position we expressed already, right? Tosfos and Sadi Dalet Amar Aleph, Yivar Maskel Reb Shimon Poter, says, Nirur Lari, the Malacha Shein Tzricha Lagufa, Kari Kisha Osa Malacha V'Ein Sarach La'Oso Tzarach K'Ein Shadi Tzricha Lama Mishka. Elo L'Inin Acher. Ki Atzarach Shaisa Malacha Nases Bishvilo, B'Mishkan Hu Guf HaMalacha V'Shorsho That since the Mishkan is the Shoresh of the Malachos, so whatever reason they did it in the Mishkan, that's how it gets defined. And if you're doing it for something else, you are deviating from the definition. So the Fiza Asikulu Shaper, then he goes into all these examples why it doesn't exactly fit. Yes,
so according to Tosos, though, what about for something like a Tolos Malacha that wasn't necessarily mentioned at all?
So we'll see, we'll get to that. We're not going to get to that today. But we'll see, there is a big discussion about whether or not Toldos fit neatly into the Malach Shemitzvich Lagufa issue. And I think, even though it's something that's a little bit of a background point there, that's also going to be affected greatly by how we define Malach Shemitzvich Lagufa. Right? So if the whole issue of Tolda is how it's derived from an Av, and Av comes from the Mishkan and Tolda less so, so Malach Shemitzvich Lagufa, what is its problem? Is its problem that it's less Mishkan based, or is its problem that it's inherently negative, which is
Mishkan kind of point,
which I think will affect the whole Tolda issue, and we'll get to that eventually. Yeah.
How does Tosfos understand the Yerushalmi with the Rabbi Yochanan under Ishakish and Mark Lepatish?
So how would that be oppressed? The Mark Lepatish is constructed.
Well, that something that is is a constructive act, but yet it's different than the Mishkan, is not a straight Malacha. So then that seems like on the face of that Yerushalmi, which is at least the way we were explaining it with Rav Asher Weiss, that any Maisa Tikkun is usher from an Av Malacha on Makal Lepatish.
Right, so I hear what you're saying. So just to clarify the context of what Sammy's talking about, the Yerushalmi has a statement that Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish spent a long time learning Malacha Shabbos, and they derived many Toldos, 39 Toldos for every Av. And then the Gemara has a sign that whatever they couldn't figure out what Av it should go to, they put under Makkah the Patish. Which is difficult because we generally would assume that for it to be a Malacha, it has to match an existing Malacha. If it doesn't match, then it shouldn't make the list. Why are they apparently coming in with the assumption that it should be on the list and we got to figure out where it goes? So apparently, we discussed with Rav Asher Weiss having an explanation along these lines, that they came in with a conception that tikkun is anything that is a tikkun, anything that is a constructive purpose, is itself or automatically a malacha, and we have to figure out what malacha it fits under. And if it doesn't fit under any, then it fits under Makkah Lepatish. So I think Sammy's correct that that view works much better with all the other Rishonim, who seem to come from that premise that it's all about constructiveness. If it's constructive, then good. If it's not constructive, it's at a remove. And this whole philosophy that essentially we're using the Mishkan as a model for what types of constructive behavior are called malachos, so then that's helpful. So it could be, you could just leave it at that, that Yerushalmi does seem to support that perspective of Rov Rishonim. Otherwise, we could say that there is a specific malacha called Makkah Bepatish, which was from the Mishkan, and they understood it broadly. They understood that malacha as referring to fixing things, and therefore it comes to include rather than to exclude. Right? It basically says that anything that's an existing 38 other 38 malachos, if it is negative in purpose, is going to get dropped off the list. But something that's not on the list, but is constructive, will get included under a heading of Makkah Lepatish. So Tosfos could agree with that. No? Well, their point is that they're not... Their emphasis, Rishami's emphasis of Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan, is that they're including new malachas. Right, there's something that doesn't necessarily fit anything else, but because it's constructive, we'll include it. So Tosfos could also agree that that could happen. They're just saying that what makes something drop off the list? It gets dropped off the list because it doesn't match the Mishkan. And some Achronim, by the way, see in Tosfos you need both. It needs to be both constructive and match the Mishkan.
Why wouldn't that statement of Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish include everything that also, meaning the fact that it's not the same, according to Tosfos, the fact that it's not the same as the Mishkan removes it from that av malacha. So that should
right.
also
but
be
it
the
could
same
be,
thing.
But it could be that it's another av malacha, that if it's actually constructive, then maybe it'll be an av malacha of makom patish.
So then how do you ever have a malacha shein tzichul gufo?
If it's not... Right, yeah. it could be both, and that's how some Achronim understand Tosfos is saying both, that if it's to be Malach Shein Shvichul Guf, it has to be both, not the Mishkan and not constructed. Which is not necessarily the same as Makalka. Makalka is destructive. Right? It's another step beyond not being a Malach. That's what we saw in our Gemara 9 Gimel, that even Rabbi Yehuda acknowledges Makalka as Pater, while still not acknowledging Malach Shein Shvichul Guf. Hi.
In terms of how we derive the malachot, so isn't there a machloket of if we derive them from the Mishkan or just how many times it says malach in the Torah?
Not exactly. The machlokus was, where do we get 39 from? Everyone agrees that the malachas are from the Mishkan, right? Or at least for our purposes, everyone agrees that. The machlokus in the Gemara, the way Tosfos explains it, the way Tosfos over there in Ventes explains it, other Rishonim explain it, is that the question is 39 from the, is a drasha of Sukkim to get 39. So the question was, is that, do we get 39 from the Pasuk and then the Mishkan tells us what the 39 are, or do we look to the Mishkan for everything? But when it comes to Malach Meshavis, we'll see that there is somewhat of a machlokus about that as well. Okay, so now, now we'll see is that there's going to be a struggle among the Rishonim how to address certain cases, and they're going to attempt to resolve what the differences are between certain examples. And you'll find some of the resolutions more satisfying than others. That's the very nature of the machlokas, that some of the rayos will be taken more powerfully for one side or the other, and you may or may not accept it. So for example, if we look at the end of this long Tosfos, so Tosfos says that he thinks his interpretation is correct, and you have to say the other Rishonim are a problem. Because he says that towards the end, if you look four lines from the bottom, where he says, for example, Kasha misosra manas livnos kamo b'tchila. Right, that is the case of, according to one view in the Gemara, that's the case of Malach Shein Shvichul Gufo. Right? Because we have a Malacha called Soser, but if you saw the Gemara in Bava Madlikin, so it's a question, what do we... Soser has to be constructive. So what makes it constructive? You knock down a building. So you knock down a building to make it better, so then maybe everyone would agree that's a constructive type of stira. But what if you knock it down in order to rebuild it somewhere else? The Gemara has a discussion about that. Or you knock it down to rebuild it the same way. So according to at least one opinion of the Gemara, that might also be a Malacha Shein Shvichul Gufo. So what about that example, says Tosfos? Or Korea b'chamaso l'mirmi imsa inche beise. Let's say somebody rips up his clothing. And he does it not because he needs the clothing to be two separate pieces, but he does it to make a show. He wants to impose discipline on his household. So there, hasam sarach l'malacha. There, he needs to do what he's doing. He needs to destroy in order to rebuild. He needs to make this whole display to his family. Berotzu shi'eva olam, and he needs this effect. So ve'ein lomar d'lo nichale shi'ein. Don't say, well, this is considered to be ein atzrich l'gufa lo nichale shi'ev sarach l'mim imsa. Yeah, well, it's really low tzrichale because he'd rather he didn't have to yell at his family. He'd rather he doesn't have to make this whole show. So therefore, it's malach shein tzrichul guf. It's like chasing away a problem. Don't say that, because then that'll take away everything. Because, for example, imke mafis mursal asos lapet. So the Gemara in Kuvzayin, which if you had a chance to see, that talks about you have a boil. You have an abscess on your skin and you want to make an opening. So the Gemara says that if you're doing it just to get the pus out, so then that's pater. But if you want the opening to be there on a consistent basis, so then that's, you're going to be chayav. So that should be malach shein tzrichul gufo. But apparently it's not. So it says Tosus, yehei pater, you should be pater in that case. Debritzono hayosh lo hayam mursa mi'ova. He'd rather he didn't have the boil in the first place. So how far do we want to go with this? Right? How far do we want to go with this view in Rishonim that something that's negatively based is not melacha that you're chayav for? I could define everything as negatively based. There are certainly some of the cases where we know there's a chayav, I could define it as negatively based. V'chein korei yiriya, v'chein korei yiriya shenafal v'adarna amanas litbor. Let's say you have a yiriya, you have a parchment, a part of the Sefer Torah that has a moth hole in it. So now you want to rip it up and re-sew it. So you could say, Debritsono lo hayanofal ba. You could say that I wish there hadn't had a hole there to begin with. Also the case of you're sewing up a torn baguette that you would have wished that it wasn't torn in the first place. So how far do you want to go with this? You're saying something is not desirable. So you could have said, well, I wished I didn't have the problem that I'm fixing in the first place. So essentially, certainly some of these specific examples, but I could go far enough and I could undermine any malach. And I could say, well, I wish I didn't have to cook. I wish I wasn't hungry. So, which is an expression you find in some Achronim I'll discuss. So, how far do you want to go with this? The Tosfos says the whole thing is not a viable approach. You have to essentially say that the Mishkan is the standard. If you're doing what they did in the Mishkan, good. If not, it's not a malach. Hi.
Rashi didn't mention that idea of, oh, I didn't want you to come except by the dead person.
Right.
So clearly Rashi wasn't applying that everywhere.
Right. So clearly Tosfos is reading something into this view of Rishonim. Rashi and the others, some of them came later, but at least Rashi, Tosfos is reading a certain attitude into Rashi, which you want to argue is not what Rashi means.
Yeah, I mean especially with the Gemara moments here about Nachum Avos Mali Hasim, meaning. Mm-hmm. That's totally out of your hands. We're the person, you know, the person who's going to die. That's totally out of your hands. That's the
right
thing to do. But everything else.
So how do you want to define Rashi then? So how do you want to defend Rashi against Tosfos' view?
I mean, he only said that. Well, I didn't want it to come on this way, anyways. Only by the dead guy.
Mm-hmm.
He also wouldn't necessarily have that svar. He was only mentioning that as a svar in order to say.
So what is the general svar? Even if he doesn't mean that in all the other cases, what is his definition of malach shein shvi'ah
l'gufa? I don't know.
Right.
Meaning that it's not that you don't need, meaning you don't care about that to do it with that particular malacha. The malacha is meaningless. It's the result that's important. You want the dead guy out of your house.
Mm-hmm.
You want the pus out of the whatever it is.
Right, so you see Tosfos' basic problem, right? Tosfos' basic problem is that
yeah,
it would seem like this definition, if you take it too far, you know, reductio ad absurdum, you could basically probably eliminate almost every malacha. But certainly a lot of cases where the malachos, where the Gemara does seem to have some unique situations, which certainly would seem to fit the situation. So basically, everyone would rather be at rest all the time, right? Nobody wants to work ever. Everyone would rather have no needs and not have to do anything in order to make their lives perfect. So one could claim that any malacha you ever do is a result of imperfection in the world. And we'd rather the world was perfect. So why is it that any malacha is called a malacha if this is the standard? Now clearly, Rashi and all the other Rishonim are going to have to define their position a little more concretely then. And that's what Tosfos is provoking, so we have to see what different approaches are there to bring this about. Hi.
I think it was mentioned earlier, but it seemed like the opposite. It seemed to me that the main thing was Kavanah.
Mm-hmm.
The question was Hanal, the symptom of Kavanah.
Okay, so part of what we saw is that's a little bit of a different language than Rashi uses, right? And so the other Rishonim who we're putting in the same camp as Rashi, using that word Hanah, isn't exactly the same.
That's the same thing as Rashi meaning Shita was Kavanah. And you're not to the other reason we're just adding on to that, if you get Hamdah, that demonstrates you have Kavanah. Expanding the general idea of Kavanah. So emphasis is not on Hamdah, emphasis is on Kavanah, and Hamdah is just a way of expanding what your Kavanah is.
Okay, but expand on that. So what is Hamdah?
So then you take away Tosfos' question, because it's not dependent on Hamdah.
So what?
Now I can't go ahead and say that, well.
But what's the difference then? So Kavanah means what, according to that?
Well, I mean, did I intend to do it, then I intend to do it. But if I get enough of something so that Mamela demonstrated that I intended to do it, even if I didn't, it's like an additional way of.
Is that what they mean? It's kind of like Nichole by Psikration. Are you saying that if you do something unintentionally, if you happen to like it, so then it becomes your problem?
That would make like an additional level on top of the basic idea of Kavanah.
Right, it's a little bit difficult to say like that because, you know, clearly the whole point is that your Kavanah was not to do this.
Well, first of all, there is a Beginner's question on Rashi in general about awakening. It seems that Kavanah is specific to, you need Kavanah in order to have Malchashet Yagufa.
See, it seems like those Rishonim are saying more that if this item has some objective benefit, even if maybe in a perfect world, in the Gan Eden, that's a good Parshas Bereishis topic, that in the Gan Eden setting, you wouldn't have had to do this malacha, but now that we've been sent out of Gan Eden, so now we need to do these malachos, so that doesn't make it a malacha shenitzvich l'gufa, because the mice, okay, I wish I wasn't hungry, but now that I'm cooking, I'm happy that I'm cooking, I'm enjoying the food, even though maybe I wouldn't have been forced to do this if I had everything provided for me. I was never hungry in the first place. Still, that's a positive action. While something that's just about getting rid of something, that's not necessarily a positive action. Danny?
But then, according to the Rashba, so I didn't understand how, if you were taking out a dead body to bury it, isn't there an inherent value in burying a body?
So we're going to get to that. That gets a little more complex also. The question is, and we're showing to deal with that a little bit later, what about the affirmative value of the burial? Right? So if that's here, we have in mind, and then we'll get into that also, the question of whether, it's a separate but related question, of whether a fulfillment of a mitzvah is a tikkun. Right? So those are elements that confuse things a little bit. But for now, what the focus is that he's taking it out so it shouldn't be in the house. The fact that he will also bury the body, that's... And that brings in extra complications. We'll have to address them. But for now, with Rishon Ha, the fact that it's being taken out of the house is the part that makes it change here with Gufla. The burial part is what complicates them. We have to answer that. But the fact that it's being taken out of the body, out of the house, is the most shenshir with Gufla.
Are we saying that Tikkun and Hana are synonymous?
Oh, so that's a fair question. So presumably not. Right? Presumably a Tikkun is more... objective, so to speak, and Hana is about how you relate to it. But maybe one affects the other. Maybe it's that connection that you get Hana from the Tikkun is itself some kind of an indicator.
Like for the mitzvah burying, we said, don't we say like we don't get Hana? Mitzvah weren't given.
Right. So that would be a different definition of Hana. When we talk about the mitzvah srichas hava, we talk about mitzvah slav lehenes nimi rather. So that means when there's a prohibition of Hana, so then the mitzvah doesn't count as a Hana. That's probably what it means. That's actually itself a machlokes. Right, but the fact that here we're not interested in a halachic Hana, we're interested in it being an actual Hana, is it a benefit for you? So these Rishonim who were grouping with Rashi, maybe their emphasis, I think this is what Daniel's pointing out a little bit, maybe their emphasis is a little bit different, that... the fact that you are benefiting from what's going on now is itself enough to make it sricha l'guf, enough to make it constructive. So Rishonim deal with this issue. If you look again at the Rashba, you look at the Ramban, you look at the Meir, you look at the Balamor, so they're all trying to address some of these specific questions of where it's called hanalik. So for example, this case, they talk about the fact that you have the hole in the urea, that the moth hole that's there. So, okay, you would rather not do that. You would rather there not be a hole there beforehand. But now, the mice, you are building something, you are repairing something constructively. There are some interesting efforts towards defining these terms a little more specifically. For example, the idea of soser. Right, so the fact that Soser is ever considered to be Chayiv is perhaps a little bit of a challenge for this. You could ask the question of why you're, Tosis asked about why you're Pater when you're being Soser to not fully build a better building. You could ask it the other direction, right? So if any time I'm knocking down something to build it better, so then I would rather there not be anything in my way to begin with. Right, so why is that not inherently a Malacha Shinitzrit Lelegufa? So this is among many things discussed by the Kapos tomorrow. The Kapos Tamarim, we've mentioned him before. The Kapos Tamarim was written by Rav Moshe ibn Chabib. So he has three svarim on one parak of each of the three Mesechtas, Rosh Hashanah, Yuma, and Sukkah. We talked about him in the past. There's a Yom Trua on Rosh Hashanah, and the Tosfos Yom Kippurim on the eighth parak of Yuma. And he has the Kapos Tamar Man Sukkah. So in the Kapos Tamar Man Sukkah, in Daf Lamed Gimel, he has an extensive discussion of Malach Shein Tzricha L'Gufa. I didn't put it on the Mar Mekomos so as not to overburden you, but it's very worth reading if you find yourself somehow with extra time on this sugya, which is quite a broad sugya to begin with. But if you're looking for extra reading, I'd be happy to provide you with it. So the Kapos Tamarim goes into a lot of very interesting details about this. So he says, for example, when it comes to Soser, so Soser is a Malacha, it's a preparation for another Malacha. So it's not always the case that everything that you do that's negative is a preparation for another malacha. So you want to get rid of, let's say for example, you catch an animal to stop it from hurting people. So you don't intend to do any malacha with that animal afterwards. It's not necessarily a preparatory act for another malacha. And this is somewhat evocative of what we spoke about when we talked about Choresh. And we said that it's surprising those who assume that Choresh is linked to Zoreya, it's a little bit surprising because why should one malacha be tied into another malacha? And we said Sidur Depas is probably not enough to justify it. And we mentioned that maybe it's because Choresh is inherently somewhat of a kilkel, and therefore the only thing that makes it on the list is the fact that it is preparation for another malacha, maybe. So too, malachas like Soser, which are inherently kilkeldik, they only make the cut because they are a step in preparation for another malach, perhaps. There is an interesting statement, as I say, from Magine Shlomo. Magine Shlomo, if you're familiar with it, was written by the author of the Tshuvas Pnei Yehoshua. Tshuvas Pnei Yehoshua was the grandfather of the Pnei Yehoshua. We talked about him, I think, the first day. So he also wrote, if I'm not mistaken, in Magine Shlomo, which, as its name indicates, what's the purpose of the Sefer Magine Shlomo? Yes, exactly. That any time Tosfos attacks Rashi, so the Magine Shlomo steps in to defend him. So on this issue, so he comments, he quotes a Rashi and Daf Kuf Zayin to make his point, that he thinks the standard that Rashi is using is, let's say the problem has been solved. You've gotten rid of the problem. Now you still have the effect left. You still have your malacha is still there. So are you interested in having that malacha still? Or once it's gotten rid of your problem, you don't need the effect of the malacha either. Follow what I'm saying? Like, for example, if you sew up a garment that was ripped. So you've taken away the hole, but now you also have a sewn garment that you want to use. You have the repaired garment. If I chase away an animal, if I trap an animal, so if the animal would disappear, I wouldn't want the trap either. So if a malach is purely there to get rid of a problem, and once the problem is gone, there's no zecher of the malach anymore, that's what Rashi would mean as a malach shein tzricha l'gufa. But if I continue to be happy that the malacha is done, and I'm now that my problem is done, my malacha is still serving me, so that's going to count as an act of malacha, even according to Rashi. That makes sense? Everyone following so far?
You give an example.
So an example, like we said, those two examples that we gave, like for example, if you're, the example when you're chayav for making a peh in the boil, right? So now that you got rid of whatever's there, but you also wanted the peh there, so now the pus came out, but you also have continued benefit from the opening. So then now you're happy that you were forced to do the malacha because of this need, but now that you've done the malacha, you're continuing to benefit from it. So that's continued to be still a malacha tzricha l'gufa. But if, let's say, the case with the animal, so you trap the animal, so now the animal's not bothering you. But if the animal would disappear and your trap would disappear, you'd also be happy. You're not interested in anything other than the animal not being here. So then that's going to be a malach shein tzricha l'gufa according to him. Hi.
So how do you understand the Mishnah b'mem avikin? Because how could it be chutz min apsila? Because in all the cases,
whether you're doing it for Nir or for Shaman, you're also getting the Pech on.
Oh, so then that's like, well, you're not necessarily getting a Pech on. You're only getting a Pech on if it's useful.
What do you mean? When, I mean, it has a Psima, it's lit, and when you blow it out, there is a Pech on.
Right, but isn't that why some of the Rishonim focus on Osa as opposed to Nasa? Not because you want the Pechem, not because it happens to be a result. That's what the Gemara uses the language.
I mean, according to this understanding, if you understand that the whole definition of Farashi is that as long as the Malach that you did is still useful for you, therefore it's a
non-Malach,
then if you blew it out, then even though you're saving it for something else and seemingly... Like the action that your kavana for the action have nothing to do with the pacham, but the pacham is still there and it's still useful and it makes the wick better.
It's not automatically useful. It's not automatically there. Now, let's say I blow out a candle in such a way the wick is gone. There was just a flame there. All I've done is just had the flame, had the candle without the flame.
It's possible. The old lamps were like flame.
All right, so maybe in many cases it won't be the case, but theoretically it's possible. I think so.
Yes.
So we'll just maybe mention one more idea, and then we'll continue tomorrow. So there is a in the Kapos Tomorrow, he has an interesting perspective that, and again, if you have the time, which is unlikely, the Kapos Tomorrow is worth reading. It's long. It's on Lam Gimel Amud Beis in Sukkah. And it's available on HebrewBooks.org. I'll be happy to provide anybody with a link. So the Kapos Tvarim suggests that, and all of these differences, by the way, all of these chilukim, it's part of the complexity of the sugya. I think all of them you'll find examples where you'll have a hard time squaring them. It's part of why we're arguing about this, because there is a certain subjectivity and there is a certain difficulty in getting everything to fit into the package. But he basically suggests as follows. He says that if you have a lot of different approaches, you have a problem, and you can solve it in many different ways, and you choose to solve it this way, right? So he actually mentions, as I said before, let's say you might say, well, why should cooking be a malacha? I'd rather not be hungry. I'd rather not have to eat. So yes, that's true, but you could solve your hunger in many different ways. At least theoretically, you can solve your hunger in many different ways. Even if, practically speaking, for whatever reason, all you have is an uncooked item you have to put in the microwave. So it could be circumstantially there's only one way to do it. But the broad goal of cooking is only one of many different ways you may address the problem of your hunger. While Malacha Shenitzricha Legufa, he understands, is when this is in your face, so to speak, so the only way you can address it is to get rid of it. So if that's the case, that essentially becomes a malacha shenitzricha legufa. You have something, you just need to get rid of it, and that's the only way you can solve your problem is by acting on that problem. That means you're essentially forced to do it. And if you're forced to do it, that's Rashi language, mirsono lahayaba, you wouldn't have chosen to do this. So he's forced to do it because of the situation. That's a malacha shenitzricha legufa. Hi.
You mean that you're in a situation where the only way to get rid of the problem is to perform the malacha.
Right, and essentially to act on this problem, because it's not like you're cooking as one of many different ways to solve your hunger, but this is in your way, you got to get rid of it, which essentially requires a malacha for you to get rid of it. So the mace in the house, you've got to get this mace out of your house. It's not you can get like a different mace out of your house. That's the mace you are trying to remove, that becomes a situation that was forced upon you, and dealing with it is a malacha she'enitzricha legufa, according to him. So the way I understood that is basically, it's like the difference between a business and a protection racket. And so basically, if I need security, I have a store and I need security. So if it's a normal business, I can hire any of 10 different security firms, or I can do anything else in order to protect my business. But if the gang comes in and starts breaking stuff and says, pay us for protection, or we'll continue breaking stuff, so that's a crime, right? That's extortion, because they're creating the problem that I need now to get rid of them. The only way to solve the problem is to get rid of them. So they're not providing a general service which happens to also address problems. they're creating the problem, and I have to get rid of them to solve my problem. So essentially, that's what he seems to understand here. It's not that, yes, everything I do, I'm cultivating the world to serve my purposes, to serve my needs. Yes, that's a positive malacha. But if X is causing my problem, and I have to act on X to get rid of it, and I'm forced to because X is my problem, so then that's a malacha she'enis rikhulit for his understanding. And there is an interesting tshuva about this, and the tshuva is Dvar Yehoshua. I think we mentioned him also. He was a 20th century posek. He was a dayan in Tel Aviv. I think he died in the 60s. So he has a tshuva where he talks about this kapos tomorrow, and he gives a mashal, which I put the shach, it's a long shach, so if you didn't see it today, I wouldn't necessarily spend so much time reading it tomorrow. But he gives the following mashal. Says that there is a concept called matzala atzmo b'mamon chaveiro. Right? Let's say I have to save my life, and to save my life, I steal your stuff. So sometimes, even though pikuach nefesh doches hakol, if I stole your stuff, it's an opinion of the Gemara that sounds like maybe it's usher to do that, or maybe at least if I do that, I have to pay back. So the Shach explains that there's basically two different scenarios. Let's say somebody comes with a gun to my head and says, I'm going to kill you if you don't give me $1,000. So I don't have $1,000. See, show up with $1,000 or an hour, or I'll shoot you. So I don't have $1,000. So I find somebody's $1,000 and I steal the $1,000 and I give it to this guy who's going to kill me. So that's matzil atzmo mamon chaveiro. I saved myself with his money and I'm chayav for that. But let's say he says to me, bring me Donnie's laptop or I will shoot you. So then, what's he forcing me to do? He's forcing me to take Donnie's laptop. I have no other option. This is the only thing he's going to accept. So that's straight out pikuach nefesh doches hakol, I'm not even a chayav for it. So what's the difference between the two scenarios? Right, in the first case, I have a problem, and I need to solve the problem. I could solve it any of a number of ways. Happens to be I solved it by robbing Jonathan. So I owe Jonathan because... Even if circumstantially the only option I had was robbing Jonathan, that was not the nature of the illness. He didn't say, give me Jonathan $1,000. But in the second case, where he said, give me Donnie's laptop, so that was the nature of the illness. The illness was, you've got to bring me this specific thing. So therefore, it was a situation of pikuach nefesh for me to bring that. So I'm potter for that. I don't even have to pay for it. That was a straight out pikuach nefesh illness situation. You understand the difference? So Dvar Yehoshua suggests within the Kapos Tomorrow, he says that's what's going on. That if I have a general need, which I'm addressing any number of possible ways, this is one of them, that's the Malacha Tzricha L'Gufa. But if I'm forced into a situation where the situation only gives me this one option to remove a problem, that's going to be a Malacha She'en Tzricha L'Gufa. Essentially, it's as if I'm lacking in intent to do it because I had no other choice but to do this action. So we'll expand on that a little bit tomorrow. Just to mention a particularly fascinating point that the Kapos Tomorrow says in that context. So he discusses, so why is it that ripping up your clothes, Tosis mentioned, if you rip up your clothes in order to instill discipline in your household, why is that a malacha she'en tzricha l'gufa? Why don't we say that according to the Rishonim, you're doing something constructive, you're imposing discipline. That's a constructive act. So he says, really, it's interesting from a psychological point of view. And he says, really, you could have imposed discipline many other ways. Why did you rip this garment? Because you couldn't control yourself. You got so angry in the midst of your display to try to impose discipline on the household, you, against your will, essentially, lost your temper and ripped this garment. So therefore, that's the malach she'en tzricha l'gufa. The Gemara tells you why you did it. You did it in the context of trying to make a point of discipline, but this actual action you were only doing because your emotions forced you to do it, and therefore that's called the malach she'en tzricha l'gufa. You would have wished, if you were in control of yourself, you wouldn't have done this, which is a truly fascinating idea. We'll just throw in one other point while we're here, and then we'll quickly review. Everyone following so far? Does this make sense? I know this is a somewhat of a conceptually difficult point. So there is a there's also a point that's made in the sefer, a very beautiful sefer, and the concept of malachas machshavas, nesivas shalom. So he knows you could also say just every malach, like we said before, you could reduce things far enough to say that any malacha should be malachas in its rishul gufa. Why do I have to be kotzer? Why do I have to take stuff off a tree? I'd rather I have the produce here right now. Why do I have to do that? Why do I have to be borer? Why do I have to separate anything? So he says, he assumes the rishon take it as a given, that anything that's in its natural form is already a malacha hatzrichul gufa. Anything that is made that way by nature, and you have to act upon nature to get it the way you want, that's a straight out malacha. That the only way these Rishonim are saying a negative act is something that the malach shein esrich l'gufa, that's when it's something unusual, something that's not by necessity a part of nature. That's just another aspect to keep in mind. Okay, any questions about this? Does it basically make sense to everybody? Is this are you following? Is this can't tell whether this is getting through or not. Yeah, hi.
The Ziva Shalom, though, but the examples in the natural thing, the Ritva, are discussed. It's also by saying that it's just so inherently talking that it's
also part of it, that's the same, but just the idea that you might say, well, if I carry this logic far enough, I can say, I wish I didn't have a need to do anything. So there's certain things that are clearly the nature of the world, so that's a normal malacha. But we only start this discussion when it's not that way. Okay, so let's just, hi.
What about Marcus Forsyth? So,
right. So, in which case, well, but it's not naturally. You don't always have these things. The fact that it doesn't mean that it comes up by biological necessity. It means that you know, the nature of the world is that you're not going to have produce unless somebody's kosher. You're not going to have bread unless somebody goes through these malachas. So that's a requirement of nature. We can't say that everything is a malachas and tzrichul gufa. Okay. So essentially, just to recap the key points we've said so far, and we'll try to tomorrow try to focus on some implications of this. And also try to get down the differences between this and Pesach Reisha, we'll say just the following points, right? We said that the more common interpretation of what Malach Shein Esrich L'Gufa is that it's something that's not done for the purpose of the Mishkan. That is the view of Tosfos. But we see here that almost all the other Rishonim that come out except for Tosfos seem to say differently. Rashi and the Rashba and the Ritva and the Ramban and the Balamor and the Meiri all seem to say that it's about preventing something negative, taking care of a problem. The Bala Mor especially saying that that was not the way the Mishkan Malachas were done. And then we talked a little bit about the two different approaches to the Mishkan, either seeing Malachas Machshavas, the broad idea which happens to come from the Mishkan, or looking at the specifics of the Mishkan. We mentioned that Tosfos is clearly coming from a more Mishkan-based perspective, while the other Rishonim, while it might loosely be connected to the Mishkan, is more of a constructive view of Malacha type of perspective. We saw that the Rambam pretty likely lines up with the other Rishonim against Tosfos. We questioned whether or not that's consistent with the understanding the Magen Avos and others had, where he puts Kavana into a great role, or less of a role, rather, than the other Rishonim. We also mentioned the fact that the Rambam passes Malachim Tzvichu Gufa is Chayiv against most of the other Rishonim. And then we talked about some of the questions that could come up, Tosfos' question on Rashi and the Mela and the other Rishonim, and some of the different ways of addressing that. And we mentioned, for example, just what the Rishonim say about, well, even if you didn't want it to be there in the first place, but now it is and you're benefiting from it. We mentioned Maginei Shlomo's point about if you continue to benefit after the problem is gone, that shows you that it was a constructive malach, even if it was motivated by other reasons. And we mentioned the Kapos tomorrow, who had a couple points about how he said that Soser is a malach because it prepares for another malach, even if you'd rather not have to be Soser to begin with, but that is a distinct fact that it does preparation for another malach. How we also understood that malach shein tzrich l'gufa means, according to Rashi, that instead of one of many different possible ways, at least theoretically possible ways to solve a problem, you are forced into this because this is your problem. We suggested it's the difference between a legitimate security service and a protection racket. And we mentioned the Devar Yeshua's example from the Shach, where he says if somebody forces you to give them $1,000 or he'll kill you, then stealing somebody else's $1,000, you still have to pay it back. While if he says, give me his thing or I'll kill you, so then the onus is directly on that thing, and you're considered to be onus and you are putter, and that's essentially what he's getting at, that if you're forced to address this aspect, that's a compulsion, which is malach shein tzrich l'gufa, as opposed to a choice. And then we mentioned his interesting comment comment about tearing your clothes in anger, even though the Gemara sounds like that's something you're doing for a purpose. Basically, he's assuming you're doing it against your will, and that's why it's Malach Hashem Tzrich L'Gufa. And they mentioned the Nesiv HaShalom point, that presumably anything that happens as the natural way of the world, you can't say that it's Malach Hashem Tzrich L'Gufa because you'd rather not have to deal with it. That's the nature of a constructive point. Okay, so we will stop here. And again, in terms of preparation tomorrow, so I would encourage you to don't have to focus so much on section Aleph, which is most of what we were for. Your own purposes could die to do it, but in terms of what we'll be addressing tomorrow, we'll be addressing more from the second section. You have a wonderful day. Should be only good things.